an unbelievable, not just whitewash of justice. This is a person now who's been let off scot-free with no sense of accountability of the moral and ethical wrong of his actions. From top to bottom, not only distorting the name of the city, but then I cannot stress that in a time when you have people bringing a moral equivalency in Virginia between bigots and those fighting bigotry, then you have a person using hate crime laws that are on the books to protect people who are minorities from violence, to then turn around and use those laws to advance your career and your financial reward. Is there no decency in this man?
This is HBR News number 202. New Zealand goes full authoritarian, Trump goes after college campuses, and more, where we reflect on the stories of the week and give it the Badger treatment. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Honey Badger Radio. I am your host, Brian, and I am joined by, as always, my esteemed panelists, Hannah and the two Mikes. We have a great show lined up for you guys today, so please be sure to continue the conversations both in the chat as well as the comments section. On this week's HBR News Show, we'll be talking about the events of the week, including a study on trigger warnings, New Zealand's policy changes, and book bannings. Well, semi-book bannings. We'll get into the details of that. Chicago police experiences with PTSD, as well as suicide, and more. So stick around. It's going to be a good time. And be sure to join us afterwards for the patron-only after show. We've all heard the stereotype of the perverted Catholic priest that preys on altar boys while hiding behind his position as a man of the cloth. But did you ever hear anything about sexually predatory nuns? Well, you probably should have, but you probably know why you didn't. Well, the New York Post has written an article that shines a light on this unsurprisingly hidden subject, and we're going to go through it in the after show. So feel free to join us for the cringe. Anyway, if you'd like to...
I think sexually predatory nun is a literally translated name for a pastry they have in Denmark.
Oh, really?
Nah, it sounds like the sort of thing that
It does sound like something. Anyway, if you'd like to participate in our show after shows either as an audience member or a participant, please consider becoming a Badger yourself by going to www.feedthebadger.com and setting up a monthly subscription. If you don't want to wake up one morning and find yourself unable to find our content because YouTube finally dropped the axe on our channels, please go to badgerfeed.com. That's badgerfeed.com. And I'm going to ask you guys, before we even get started, hit that like button if you could, and let your friends know that we are live talking about news stories so that they can come and hang out, and they could also hit the like button for us. So hit that like button. Smash it now. Do it. Do it, faggots. Okay, so let's get into the stories. Now, I have to first get some breaking news out of the way that happened earlier today that we should probably address very quickly. So, first things first, Jussie Smollett, who committed a hate crime hoax, which was exposed for everyone to see, and it's very obvious that that's what was going on, has had all charges dropped, which angered the mayor as well as police.
We can officially crown him king of the Dindus now.
Yeah, yes, exactly. So, yes, this is a crazy development. I did not see it coming. All criminal charges were dropped against Empire actor Jussie Smollett in Chicago today, nearly 2 months after the actor was accused of staging a hate crime attack on himself to further his career. And probably more than that. I mean, there's lots of ways to try to further your career, but to essentially create a hate crime hoax specifically targeting Trump supporters in Chicago, I think that there's it's more than just about, like, you know, getting more paycheck from more money from your television show. The surprise decision, which was celebrated by Smollett and his legal team and blasted by the city's mayor and police department, came during an emergency court appearance. So they basically called an emergency court appearance where prosecutors not only dropped the charges against Smollett, but agreed to expunge the actor's record. So they cleaned the slate, they dropped the charges, and this whole thing happened in 5 minutes. This was a 5-minute court appearance, okay?
I smell corruption.
You think?
You know what? This is a case that has gotten the attention of the establishment. Not the federal government, but the political establishment. The mainstream press, or so-called mainstream, they're not really, they're establishment press, but they don't represent the public at all. The pressure that they have put, the pressure that politicians in the political establishment have put on Chicago has resulted in this. This isn't an exercise of justice. This is an exercise of ending something that is an embarrassment to them. And I can guarantee you the whole story's not going to come out unless somebody pries it loose with a crowbar. I don't know how much information you can get with an FOIA, but you probably could get, with a Freedom of Information Act request, you probably could get at least some information about what happened here. Of course, since it's an individual's criminal case, anything that the judge has decided can't be public, there's nothing you can do about that. But you may be able to get all the information from the police investigation, and that should be enough to start questioning why this happened and putting pressure on a local establishment to come out and explain their actions. And some local Chicago folks probably ought to do that.
Oh, absolutely.
Maybe they should be looking to a certain former governor of Illinois. Rob Blagojevich, obviously.
Oh, obviously. Well, Illinois is the most corrupt state in the country, and that's due mostly to Chicago's government itself. It's funny, that clip I showed earlier, that was Rahm Emanuel, that's mayor of Chicago, that himself was upset about this, even though Rahm Emanuel is himself also a crook and someone who worked very closely with Barack Obama. Interestingly enough, Kim Fox, who was the prosecuting attorney, the state's attorney, she recused herself in February from the case. And Jesse Smollett's attorney, I'm trying to find her name. I know it's Asian, but I can't find it here. She is connected to Michelle Obama. She's actually a very close friend of hers. I'm not saying that's the reason, but there is definitely more to this case than just like some TV show actor tried to, you know, set up a hate crime hoax in the hopes that it would get him more payola from the company for whatever reason and raise his profile. There's definitely more going on. Must be that white privilege. This is what white privilege looks like, guys. Straight white privilege. It gets you out of prison, apparently. Oh, wait, this guy's not straight or white? Oh, I'm sorry. My bad. So
Has he been... I haven't figured this out. Has he actually been found innocent of this crime? Or has he been found guilty, but
No, it doesn't matter.
We'll just give you a slap on the wrist.
If you're innocent, you don't need your record scrubbed clean.
Yeah, no, he was found guilty. Like, they were going to sentence him, and then some... You know what it is that they said the claim is that... he's already done community service because he worked on this show and the black community supposedly likes him. Now, I know the black community didn't vote on whether or not he should be the charges should be dropped. But that's from what I heard. That's the claim as to why they're dropping it. It's because he's essentially already done community service by being on the show.
He should do community service in one of Trump's casinos.
Yeah.
Like, as a security guard or some shit, you know?
He should let people know this is MAGA country as they come in. That's sort of like his little intro. So,
you know, that's a deal they really wouldn't make for anybody else. Like, they can do time served it's state imposed. But doing your own job, especially when you got kudos for doing in the first place... one that you're paid for, obviously, even having been involved in a volunteer organization, that none of that can be considered time served. You know, none of that can be considered your punishment when you have committed a crime. And in particular, this crime is expensive. It costs a lot of money to deal with allegations of criminal assault and other types of criminal allegations where they have to go out and investigate, find out who committed the crime, and build a body of evidence to try to prosecute the perpetrator. That's one of the reasons, not the only reason, but it's one of the reasons why it's illegal to file a false complaint with the police, and it's illegal to commit perjury in court, because you're wasting the resources of your community. You know, even if you weren't doing any damage to anybody, even if nobody ever gets arrested, even if nobody ever has their reputation damaged or anything, you're still costing your community money when you make a false accusation. Like, the people of Chicago should be really pissed off because he cost them quite a bit of money, and your tax dollars are going to pay for that. And he's basically getting off scot-free. And excuses that would not fly in any other case are being used to let him off.
Oh yeah, there are. He's got people. He knows people in high places, and they're taking care of him. That is for certain. That is for certain. So, okay. So we should probably get on to the next breaking news story real quick before we get into the other stories. So the next thing that you guys probably already know about. Memes, Article 13 has passed. Europe just passed sweeping new copyright rules that big tech hates. Lawmakers have approved a sweeping overhaul of copyright rule. This is CNN Business. That's why they say big tech hates. Not regular motherfuckers or people on YouTube that use memes or people on the internet. No, no, no. It's big tech that they're the ones that are butthurt over this. The European Parliament voted today to approve fiercely contested changes that make platforms such as YouTube responsible for copyright infringements committed by their users. Sites like Google News could also be required to pay publishers for using snippets of their content. So effectively, memes and like response videos that you might make, and if you're a gamer and you do gaming streams or whatever, like all of that shit is essentially in jeopardy, if not probably like not usable at all. And that's going to, well, you know, it's the EU. They're just doing what's best for you guys. And this is where we are now. So it's gone through. There's one more vote. So it's not completely done yet. There's one more vote that they have to do. I'm just going to look at where the details of this are. The vote Tuesday paves the way for the bill to become law once it has been endorsed by the European Council, which represents the bloc's member states. The European Council said it will approve the measure, but implementation is going to take 2 years. So you guys, there is the death clock. It's ticking down. You got 2 years because the possibility that they're not going to pass it in 2 years' time, pretty unlikely. So there you go.
Press so do F. Any of you know any nice places to migrate to this time of year?
Here, well, Florida's always fun.
I would suggest coming to Canada, but I'm in the U.S.
I'll come to the U.S.
Come to the U.S. in a caravan, you'll be fine. And you know, practice, work on your Spanish accent. But press F for the memes if you are in the EU, because you're not going to be able to use them. This is your last
I don't
F.
think I can even do a phony Spanish accent. I think that probably belongs to someone.
All right. So anybody else have any thoughts on Article 13 or Article 11, the absolute state of the European Union?
Is there any chance of getting it undone? Like, if the people of the various countries in the EU don't like the results of the law, is there any chance of it getting repealed?
Well, they'll probably
hold another representatives.
Vote. They'll just keep holding elections until they get the result they want, probably.
Well, yeah, that happens here, too. That's how we ended up with National Teachers Union. It's how we ended up with state teachers unions and everything. But the question is, how far gone is the EU? Are you able to replace your
Have you heard
your
of
representatives?
Narnia?
Yeah. Narnia was not a bad thing.
No, it was very far back in the wardrobe is the point.
Yeah, that's a good point. Are you able to vote people out of office, though? I mean, if
no,
you
not
can
at all.
Vote...
Only MEPs can, and I have no idea how MEPs are voted in, but they're obviously bribed out the ass when they're in there. Because they didn't even allow any amendments. Because, like, Dankula and Sargon themselves went in there to fucking look at this shit. They were, and they, all sorts of amendments were shoved in there, like for local authorities or countries to override Article 13 in certain instances. But no, none of that's allowed. We all got to bend at the knee and fucking kiss the bollocks of Article 13.
See, oy. That's insane. That is insane. At some point, the people are going to have to take Europe back. Because what you've got there is an authoritarian system that is basically squeezing harder and harder to try to maintain control over a huge population. Because they think they're better than you. And this is just a part of that.
They are better
now,
than you. They're much better than you.
There's a new tool. Yeah, there's a new tool now to shut
memes,
people up.
They've taken who, your porn.
There's a new tool now to shut people up.
Because we're not
up
afraid
the,
to get ourselves covered in Muslims.
Yeah, it's just there's a new tool now they have to shut people up who engage in political speech they don't like. Because everything is now off limits. Everything is somebody's property. Even memes, even if they can't prove that somebody else owns it, you can't use the most common form of communication to criticize your government or to discuss a political issue, to exchange political ideas. This wasn't an attack on people's, you know, use of things that belong to big businesses. This was an attack on your ability to exchange ideas
yep.
outside of the control of your government.
Yep. It's not about tech at all. It's not about those big companies.
Of
it's
course
about
you can't
regular
meme
people.
About, you can't meme about political things. You might get the wrong person elected.
Yeah. Can't have that.
You know, you might get something like Brexit passed well, again. We can't have that.
And you got to keep those Russian bots out of there. Oh, wait a minute. So, Hannah, you're saying we got to fight back. So, basically, Crusades when?
Yeah, there's got to be something. You know, I mean, hopefully it could be peaceful. You know,
yeah,
hopefully.
Just have a referendum. It's everyone will simply accept the result.
Yeah. But there has to be something, because otherwise, you know, Europe is pretty much fucked.
Yeah, you guys really like... We might have to intervene with our own memes. Maybe the U.S. should send memes to the beaches of Normandy and try to like fight back.
Let's drop Seriously. Some laser guided memes right on Parliament.
That's right.
It's the scariest thing is the very same people who will you know the very same social justice warriors who will claim Europe has no culture, will also cling to this fucking European nationalism. Like limpets to the fucking underbelly of a dead whale or some shit. Like, do you not see the disconnect there? Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a shame. So, you know, this is all new stuff. Let us know what you think about both of these stories. Do you think the Jussie Smollett thing is essentially proof that there is no, like, institutional... racism, and that's kind of bullshit. At least that's my belief. I've always felt that way. And the EU thing, do you think we can bounce back from this? It's or do you think it's pretty much it's fucked? What can people do? So let us know. Maybe there's some additional information. This is all pretty new. There's probably some information about this we don't know, and also that is still forthcoming. So let us know in the comments section what you think, and sorry for the last minute ad, but these are things I learned about just before the show, and I tried to like get it in there. So we're going to get into the stories that we had planned out, and we're going to start by talking about trigger warnings, and this one is for Mike J. So Mike J, if you could please.
So trigger warnings. That's the trigger warning for this article. A new study conducted by the University of Waikato and the City University of New York revealed that trigger warnings, which are, quote, visible warnings placed on controversial material and material that might cause post-traumatic stress disorder in individuals who have experienced certain forms of trauma, have little to no effect positively or negatively on an individual's mental health. As part of the study, quote, researchers showed 1,394 volunteers distressing content in video and written form, with some of the volunteers seeing trigger warnings such as, "Trigger warning, the following video may contain graphic footage of a fatal car crash. You might find this content disturbing," end quote. Robbie Sove reports in Reason magazine that, quote, "trigger warnings don't really leave anyone worse off, but they don't help matters either. Study participants who received a trigger warning were just as bothered by traumatic words and images as participants who saw the same words and images without any forewarning," end quote. The study actually makes a better case for trigger warnings than the one performed by Harvard University, in which they concluded that trigger warnings make people less resilient to trauma and could make reactions worse. One of the lead researchers of the study summarized their findings by stating, quote, "We, like many others, were hearing news stories week upon week about trigger warnings being asked for or introduced at universities around the world. Our findings suggest that these warnings, though well-intended, are not helpful."
The thing about traumatic events is very few of them can be recreated on a screen, because they're more than just a two-dimensional visual experience. It's, you know, when you've actually got PTSD, it's usually from something, you know, intensely claustrophobic or something like that. It's something that you have to get used to in order to keep on going, and then once you're used to it, you're like, anything you see on a screen or, you know, in a one-dimensional sound recording is water off a duck's back. Surely.
I've heard that a lot of veterans have a hard time living around where I live, because I'm not super far from Disneyland. And every night, 9:30, you've got the fireworks show. And the fireworks, at a certain range, sound exactly like a mortar going off. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
There was an episode, an early episode of, I think we were just calling it Honey Badger Radio when we first started. And we played a gag, basically, sketch of some sort. I can't remember what it was, but it had the sound of either fireworks or gunshots in it. And up through the chat, immediately, as soon as it started playing, you know, like, we found out who all the veterans in the chat were. So we didn't play that again, because it really can, like, with a post-traumatic stress response, you can't necessarily always predict what's going to trigger the individual. And, like, the closest thing I have to it is my response to car accidents, because of the time that I was in the back seat of a car my mom almost died in after an accident. And most of the time, like, I can deal with just about anything. I won't start driving my car forward until everybody has their seatbelt on. But there was one day at work when there was an accident at the intersection. I worked on an intersection that had three gas stations, and it was like there were accidents at that intersection every day because people are idiots. And people in the Dayton area don't know how to drive. And so there were fender benders all the time. And, like, I witnessed fender benders a lot. But there was one accident where one vehicle sort of T-boned another vehicle and crushed in the side of that vehicle, similarly to the way the car I had been in was damaged. And actually, they had the same response. They had to go get the jaws of life to get the passenger out of the car. And it was like deja vu hit really hard, and for about 10 minutes I couldn't even do anything. Like, I was just completely useless, and I felt so stupid, right? Because it wasn't my car accident. That car accident happened in 1982, and I hadn't had that kind of reaction to anything for years. I'd gotten to the point where I could describe in detail the events as they had taken place, step by step. This is what the accident was like. I could do it without, you know, crying or anything. And then in that moment, it was like, you know, so much for having gotten over it, right? And that's one in the moment thing. So when you have somebody that's been through something like combat, where this stuff is happening to them every day, or by surprise and can happen at any moment on any day, and they're in that situation for months or years, you can imagine, you know, how they can be taken by surprise by stuff like that. And you can tell somebody ahead of time that something that might bother them is going to happen, but you can't necessarily predict how it's going to affect them. And then at the same time, you have people who, well, it says it does, the trigger warnings don't necessarily leave anybody worse off. I have seen, I hate to call them snowflakes, but people who really wallow in the victim identity, like treat themselves as unable to ever recover from something like a sexual assault or another experience like that, which is a horrible experience, but there's a lot of recovery that can be had regardless. And as soon as they're given a trigger warning, they start to have anxiety buildup. And is the resulting panic attack due to the content or due to the fact that you caused them to anticipate how bad the content was supposed to be? It's almost useless, but at the same time, I think there is a way in which it can be kind of damaging.
Obviously, there's some kind of trigger warnings that do work, like epilepsy warnings. They definitely do help, and they're generally appreciated when they're put in. I suppose loud noises, especially gunshots, is not neurologically similar, but a similar thing. You can at least measure that. You can say, okay, you can warn people there's going to be very loud noises and they're going to sound a lot like guns, but you can't do that for every possible kind of traumatic event. Because that could include anything. You know, if a kid got mauled by a dog when they were very young, which does happen very often, and they get traumatized by it, they still have to see images of dogs everywhere. And they get over it because there's images of dogs everywhere, you know?
Yeah, I think that there's definitely cases in which warnings are absolutely, you know, they make perfect sense. And you said epilepsy. I think that they do. They also make warnings for such like bright lights and loud noises for children on the spectrum, because they don't react well to that kind of thing either. But the problem with trigger warnings is that, you know, they've been broadened. The definition of them, the desire to use them has become common enough that it's for all kinds of things that people should probably try to get over, and they don't have a neurological condition, or they weren't, war veterans that, you know, were hiding from a mortar fire, or had, experienced a near fatal sort of life altering incident. But they're just people who don't like certain imagery, you know, they use it as a kind of crutch, right? And it essentially doesn't. And then the more they use it as a crutch, I noticed that the chat stopped moving. The more they use it as a crutch, the harder it is for them to get over it. And it actually ends up weakening them in a lot of ways. And this is the main thrust of the study, is not to talk about people who actually have PTSD, which we're going to get into, because there actually is a story about that in our story about Chicago police, which actually kind of ties to this pretty well, interestingly enough, but I'll get to that later. But rather, I think that the trigger warning thing is essentially a problem because on college campuses, people use trigger warnings for anything, for seeing a white guy in the hallway, for, having somebody ask them if they could touch their hair, having, just for all kinds of things that,
sauce on food in the cafeteria.
Yeah, sauce on food in the cafeteria.
Exactly. I'm not even joking. That was a real one. Student had to go home from college because she couldn't deal with seeing sauce on food in the cafeteria.
Exactly. Or, you know, if you're like a vegan and there's somebody eating a hamburger.
Or someone's eating a pizza with pineapple on it. Well, that's fair enough, I suppose.
Yeah, that's fair enough. That's
not me weighing in on the issue, by the way.
Make it illegal.
It's a funny thing to say.
Although pizza on pineapple, that's different. But anyway, But it's basically the difference between, you know, people who genuinely have issues that require them to live a life in which they are, to some degree, you know, I wouldn't say protected, but prepared for these kinds of stimulus, versus people who just want the world to become like a pillow fort for them. And this is the reason why the trigger warning study is important, because they don't actually help those people. They don't do anything for them. And it's actually not beneficial. So that's, I think, the big takeaway from this. And again, this is not anything we didn't know, but now it's out there. So you can actually, if you know someone who uses the trigger warning thing, let them know that it's actually not going to protect them from whatever it is that they're bothered by, and they actually just need to grow a spine and deal with it.
Oh, that's so. Criticism. That's one of their triggers.
Oh, yeah, that's right. okay, so, and pineapple and ham on pizza is good, but it's not my favorite. It's not my go-to. Okay, so anyways, with that said, does anybody else have any comments about this story, or should we just move on to the next one? Okay, so we're going to be talking about New Zealand next, and I'm going to hand it off to Mike again. So, Mr. J?
After a heavily armed anarcho-fascist stormed two mosques in Christchurch, New Zealand, leaving over 40 dead, New Zealand's government has gone crazy. I'm not going to sugarcoat it, that's just basically what's going on. The killer's manifesto, which is easily findable online, has now been classified as objectionable and is illegal to access, share, or read. Radio New Zealand reports that New Zealand's, not making this up, this is a job title, Chief Censor.
Is New Zealand in the EU? Or are they just setting the, are they just like the, you know, the trailblazer? Are they just sort of setting the standard?
Is it too soon for the 1984 references?
No.
Well, it's a lot like the birds that are sort of native to that island. They've gone so long without any natural predators that when one comes along, it just fucks up their ecosystem.
So, New Zealand's chief censor, David Shanks, states, quote, "There is an important distinction to be made between hate speech, which may be rejected by many right-thinking people, but which is legal to express, and this type of publication, which is deliberately constructed to inspire further murder and terrorism. Most New Zealanders who have read this will simply find it repellent, but most New Zealanders are not the target audience. It is aimed at a small group who may be receptive to its hateful, racist, and violent ideology, and who may be inspired to follow the example set by its apparent author." End quote. Sharing, accessing, or reading the manifesto could lead to a $10,000 fine or up to 14 years in
Jesus
jail.
Christ.
And there have already been, to my knowledge, at least two arrests for this so far.
Reading the manifesto will get you 14
years. Reading, accessing,
years.
Sharing.
Mm-hmm. Up to 14 years in jail.
And then when you're in jail, they'll give you a Quran to read.
In an even more confusing move, Witkoolas, a national bookstore in New Zealand, has banned Jordan Peterson's book 12 Rules for Life. So the government has not banned it, but this one national bookstore, I'd guess it would be like, I don't know, if Barnes & Noble in the U.S. banned a book. It wouldn't be de facto banned, but it would just be banned from most places, because, I mean, where else do you go to buy books?
So personal accountability is dangerous now.
Mm-hmm. Can't have that.
People might start thinking for themselves. When reached for comment, a customer representative for Witkoolas stated, quote, "It is a decision that Witkoolas has made in light of some extremely disturbing material being circulated prior, during, and after the Christchurch attacks. As a business which takes our responsibilities to our communities very seriously, we believe it would be wrong to support the author at this time."
They are still stocking Mein Kampf. Repeat, they are legit still stocking Mein Kampf. Carry on.
I bet you can find the Communist Manifesto there too.
Oh yeah. There's nothing wrong with that book. It's fine, it's just a theory. I mean,
otherwise known as the SJW Bible.
Yeah, how are you going to do?
Just
look,
a theory.
The only way you're going to get communism right is if you have the instruction manual. So we can't hide it because then we can't keep trying to do it right. Give it a chance, guy.
When communism is outlawed, only outlaws will have communism. I don't know. This decision is extremely puzzling, as the book nor Peterson himself espouse any ideology that can be remotely considered extreme or even hateful. The only explanation onlookers have reached is the possibility that a picture Peterson took with a man wearing a proud Islamophobe shirt sparked this hasty move for the National Bookstore. By the way, I did see that picture, and it was quite literally one of hundreds that he took as part of a speaking engagement. That was part of the deal, you know, with your ticket, you get a picture with Peterson at the end of the thing. So, I mean, I guess no matter what shirt they were wearing, you'd get a picture with him, you know, if it said proud Christianophobe.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Or if, you know, you had a shirt with a bunch of sexy ladies on it, or, you know, if you had a shirt that said Make America Great Again, or... As long as you're, you know, like, just those. I'm sure that this guy was just going through the photos, right? And he was totally sane, had no plans on doing anything. Then he came across that photo of Jordan B. Peterson with this guy with this t-shirt and said, you know what? I'm going to go shoot up a mosque. That's exactly what happened.
There was probably a guy with a t-shirt that said, fuck the Jews, but that just wasn't as spicy as this, you know?
Yeah.
And last line, Whitcools has not confirmed or denied that this is the reason.
Well, it's hard to say. But
so they might have actually just banned it because personal accountability is too scary for them. Not because they care that somebody wore an Islamophobe shirt.
Well, yeah, they don't know.
I really wish Christopher Hitchens were alive today, because I'd just... point his ass at these people like a shotgun. He warned us about this when the Salman Rushdie thing happened. It's not just like books that even poke fun at Islam. It's fucking stuff that is not even related to it, like Peterson's book. And they'll use the same justification for going slowly up or down the fucking, I don't know, whatever the political compass really is.
It's crazy. I honestly don't have a whole lot to add to the story. It's just New Zealand, you know, it's just completely lost its shit over this. I guess this is, you know, it looks bad because they're calling it like the worst mass murder in recent history that we have on record, or whatever. But, trust me, it's probably not that bad. There's probably lots worse ones that happen every day in certain parts of the world. They just don't happen to have people around to record it.
Less than a couple of days after the mosque shooting, a whole bunch of Christians got killed by Muslims in the Philippines. But
what are you? What are you kidding? That didn't happen. That didn't happen because CNN didn't say it. I have a TV, so I know the truth. Bill Maher said so. That's how it works.
But they're doing everything that the shooter wanted.
I took issue with that guy's shirt. Islamophobe means that you have an irrational fear of Islam. I don't think there's anything irrational about being concerned
there's no such thing as ursophobia, because it's not irrational to be afraid of bears. There's no such thing as leophobia. Because fucking lions. There's no such thing as Islamophobia, because Islam is a massive fucking lion, see?
It's quite. All right, so anyway, does anybody else have any final thoughts on the New Zealand story?
Just that they're doing everything that this guy wanted them to do. Like, play by play.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really dumb. They've pretty much... he could not have been more effective. There isn't a easier way to achieve what he said he was trying to achieve than to trigger the snowflakes. And he really did a good job triggering the snowflakes.
And they're so cocksure that, like, well, the thing we got to do is just not say his name because it's the fame he wants. No, in the manifesto, again, if we're going to trust the manifesto because we have no other frame of reference to get into this guy's mind, he didn't give a shit. He's like, I know my name's going to be forgotten in the next month. I don't care about that. I care that what I'm going to do is going to have longer-lasting repercussions. Because he was all about accelerationism. He was all about trying to divide the left and right even more. He was more or less trying to eventually start a civil and race war.
Yeah, that's what he wanted to do. So it's like
and he did.
I wonder if the guy who shot Franz Ferdinand wanted the same thing.
You know, we're in a position now where the people who seem to have been accepted by the establishment as the moral arbiters of our culture, our world culture, not just like our local cultures, but the culture that they're trying to establish worldwide, have actually gotten away with essentially saying the level of wrongness of a murder is dependent on who the victim is, right? That you can commit a reprehensible act and it'll be ignored if you target the right people, but if you target the wrong people, everyone will get outraged and it can be used to make changes in law and policy and the social structure of the area in which it happens. It can be determined to be worse than a similar reprehensible act that happened less than a year ago, maybe. It feels like it hasn't been that long since the Vegas massacre, which you know, it's very similar in terms of the amount of death, and actually worse in terms of the number of people that were actually injured. There were hundreds of people that were injured in that, but somehow because the people that were injured and killed in this one are of a particular faith, this one's worse. So you could have 1,000 people die if they're the right people and nobody notices. And you can have 10 people wounded, and if they're the accepted victims, it's a tragedy.
Or the accepted perpetrators, because this was
right,
a white male,
so
that means it gets top billing. But, you know, in
so
Chicago,
when you take it up to death,
people die every day, and they're killed. There's black guys getting killed by black guys. No one talks about it.
Right. And then when you take it up to the level of death like this guy did, that just makes it that much more exploitable by the social justice end of things. Because then they can, well, you just don't care that these people got killed. You know, and it doesn't matter that they don't care that other people got killed. It only matters that they can accuse you of not caring that these people got killed. You could say it's wrong 1,000 times. You could say the guy was a monster. I think he was a reprehensible human being, which is worse than being a monster because monsters are mindless and not responsible for their actions.
Yeah,
and
like,
I don't think either of those things is true this
Yeah, it's like when they called him crazy, and I watched the video. I downloaded it. I have it on my computer because I wanted to see it. And I watched the video that he recorded his stream. That guy was evil, and I don't say that lightly. Like I you know, but that was evil. That was calculated. That was planned out. That was purposeful. That was
to some degree, like to some degree, we sort of think, well, you've got to have something wrong with you fundamentally to even be able to pull that off, let alone pull it off as coldly as he did. Like, it's the kind of thing you think, does this guy have a tumor or some shit? You know.
Yeah, I think that in part, it's nihilism. I think he was filled with nihilism, and I think that in his mind,
at a certain point, you just got to blame the individual, like regardless of how they got into this position. But, yeah.
Well, let me put it this way: having something wrong with you is it's perfectly reasonable to see a person who has no compunctions about committing an act like this as having something wrong with them, but having something wrong with you isn't necessarily always an excuse. And like, we have a standard in the U.S. for if you are considered not guilty by reason of insanity, and it's very, very hard to meet that standard. You have to be able to prove, or your defense has to be able to prove that at the moment when you committed the crime, you did not know the difference between right and wrong. So his assertions that he was using this for shock value are an admission that he knew the difference between right and wrong, because he demonstrated that he knew other people would be horrified at what he had done. And if he just, you know, did this and then expected everybody to go, yay, you know, you got rid of all those people, then there would be, he would have crossed the line between having something wrong with him but still being responsible for his actions, and having something so wrong with him that he couldn't be considered accountable, that he couldn't be considered capable of not doing what he did. And that the only difference between those two designations in a case like this would be where they would incarcerate him. You can be considered not guilty by reason of temporary insanity. That's even more rare. And not be incarcerated. But if they find that there's something so wrong with you that you don't know that you should not murder people, and they find that you're likely to do it again, you get locked up for life in a mental institution. So it's not really, like, even then, there's still, you can consider it a punishment. It's containment. But there's no excuse it. Like, even if there's something wrong, you can say there's something wrong with somebody. You can talk about there being something wrong with somebody. And it doesn't, people shouldn't take that as a means of excusing his actions. I just am bothered when people use terms like animal and monster to distance the person who did it from the action. Like, I hate that, because that does sort of run along the lines of walking away from responsibility. But you're saying something's wrong with him, that's different.
Yeah, if there's anything wrong with him, diagnosably speaking, it's full-on psychopathy, not just sociopathy. This guy seems to actually enjoy this. And that's, you know, it's, a diagnosis of psychopathy has never kept anyone out of a prison before, as far as I know. Or maybe, unless, like you say, it's the kind of psychopathy where they need padded walls and shit. But I think prison is... this guy is exactly what prison is built for, I think.
Yep, one way or another. I mean, that'd just be a different prison.
Okay, all right. Yeah, so that's the story on that. Thank you guys for your thoughts on it. I'm going to read some super chats, and then we'll go on with the rest of it. Mighty Balzac gives us $5 Australian and says, careful what you say, HBR, or you'll end up on a blacklist. Sorry, I mean a list of color. Thank you, Mighty Balzac. Altair Mawat gives us $2 in New Zealand dollars. So I hope you guys are doing okay. He says, send help, government oppressive.
Oh, you can still see us in New Zealand. Yay, I did wonder.
Yeah. He says, send help, government oppressive. Sounds like it. The Great Indoors 1979 gives us €5 and says, if only the Christchurch shooter would have included the completion of the United States Wall in his manifest. Yeah, then we can get that done too, right? No, he just wants, you know, civil war and to divide us along left and right lines. In the U.S., no less, which is strange, because what he did shouldn't have any implications or effects on us, but it does. It does, because they're doing exactly what they wanted.
I think he didn't mention the wall because he probably wants the wall and doesn't want to give the wall a bad name. I
mean, yeah.
The only person he mentioned was Candace Owens because he doesn't like Candace Owens.
Yeah, there is that.
Owen PewDiePie probably doesn't even know who the fuck PewDiePie is.
Probably knows who T-Series is. I don't know. All right, so let's move on to the next story. We're going to be talking about police suicide. This should be interesting, and I'm actually interested in this story myself, so obviously, as a Chicagoan. So I get into the super chat. I'll read it out real quick. Soul Gem N5, Su Gen M, whatever, you know who you are, gives us $10 and says, psychopathy and sociopathy is the same pathology with different names. Psychopathy got relabeled to sociopathy to reduce the stigma of the diagnosis. Yeah, because that's important.
Interesting.
Yeah, thanks for telling us that. That was interesting, though. Okay, so the Chicago Tribune reports that six Chicago police officers have killed themselves over the last 8 months. This has set off alarm bells, as this number has increased from the average of 2 to 4 a year in the past. So, kind of a high number. The officers who have died since July include 2 detectives, 3 officers, and a sergeant. 5 were men, so 5 of the 6. And the average age was about 43. All but one died from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. 1 died by carbon monoxide poisoning inside of a car. 3 either were in their squad car or parked outside of their district station. Quote, while suicide in general is on the rise in the United States, research suggests that there is an elevated risk for suicide amongst law enforcement. Quote, according to Blue Help, an organization formed to raise awareness about officers' mental health, killed in the line of duty is increasingly being matched by officer suicide. In 2016, 171 officers across the country were killed in the line of duty, while 140 committed suicide. In 2018, 150 officers were killed in the line of duty, and 163 died from suicide. So there are more cops last year. There were more cops that killed themselves than they were actually killed in the line of duty. Carrie Steiner.
I wonder if that's going to start happening in Britain when cops start realizing what they've done.
I don't know. It's a good question. Carrie Steiner, a former police officer who now operates a counseling center, says she uses several evidence-based methods for treating trauma in officers. Surprise, they aren't trigger warnings or safe spaces, but cognitive behavior therapy and exposure therapy. Quote, for example, she uses a replica gun to help officers suffering trauma related to use of a weapon. The point is to get used to holding it and taking it apart, a form of exposure therapy. This is why I wanted to bring this story up as sort of a contrast to the trigger warning thing. So what she uses is essentially exposing these people, these guys that have PTSD effectively, this is what's killing them, to sort of reintroducing them to stimulus and letting them become familiar with it so they don't have that same sense of not being in control. And this will help them, sort of heal mentally. For an officer who was attacked in a jail cell, Steiner conducted the session in the relatively enclosed space of a hallway. Chicago officers may have more stress to deal with, as according to the Tribune, there's been a sharp rise in street violence and police distrust due to scandals over the past 4 years. Are you talking about all of those bullshit hoaxes and the way that they've been twisting the narrative around, these sorts of like Black Lives Matter causes? I'm pretty sure it's got something to do with that. I mean, cops can't even do their jobs now because they have to worry about what it's going to look like with the media. Quote, the 2017 justice report that led to the consent decree criticized officers for widespread civil rights violations and described their department as woefully negligent in terms of support and training. Alexa James, executive director of National Alliance on Mental Illness in Chicago, made a public plea to officers, quote, this is to the brave souls who keep us safe. Stay. We need you. If you are feeling alone and unsure, if you can't feel the ground beneath your feet or see any light in the darkness, know that you are loved and important to the world. I couldn't really speak to a policeman's job, but I got to tell you, it takes a certain kind of person. I knew a guy that was here in Chicago that I worked with, and he was training to be a cop. And he was a really good person. I will say that. I mean, that's just anecdotal or whatever, but I know that cops get a lot of shit. I know that cops are disliked by people. And I know that the reason is sort of the reason why everyone loves firemen is basically when a cop shows up at your door, it means you're in trouble. So you don't like them. When a fireman shows up in your door, it means that they're there to rescue you. But I think that they don't get enough credit. And it's crazy that their suicides is like cop suicide is higher than cops killed in action. And I don't know. It's just, I didn't know that, and I thought that was pretty interesting. So that's toxic masculinity for you, I guess.
The women have it too.
Yeah. Anybody have any other thoughts on this story?
Yeah, this situation, I don't think people realize. Like, there's a lot of people out there that just flat out hate cops because of things they've experienced in their lives, and they've run into to police officers that are corrupt. So they generalize it to all law enforcement. But then, you know, if there's gang violence or, you know, drug problems or things like that that take place in their neighborhood, then they would criticize the cops for not keeping that under control. And in Chicago, the cops are basically in a war zone. You know, in several of the big cities in the U.S., for various reasons, the cops are basically in a war zone. Only it's not a war zone where they're allowed to act like a military force. And when they take action, it's presumed a part of a war against a particular type of crime. Like, the labels get used. But if they fire their gun once, they have dozens of pages of paperwork that they have to fill out because of that. If somebody attacks them and they defend themselves and the individual gets injured, they have all kinds of justifications that they have to use to prevent themselves from being legally targeted because that person was injured. And the people who they're trying to deal with, who are committing crimes and engaging in violence and attacking their neighbors and attacking the police, they're allowed to be as violent as they want. And any kind of retaliation that takes place in self-defense, any kind of damage that gets done to them in the course of stopping their violent acts, they're entitled to outrage over that. They're entitled to sue. They're entitled to ask that the officer be investigated. Their communities will step forward and accuse the officer of being too rough while stopping the would-be murderer from killing someone. And in addition to dealing with the violence itself, to having to go into neighborhoods where people are shooting at them from places where they're hidden, they're dealing with, they're going to be treated as illegitimate when they do it. They're going to be treated like they're the abusers when they go into a neighborhood where someone is shooting other people and stop that person. So, and then they've got people lying to them. Here in the Dayton area, there are officers who responded to a call about an active shooting in progress at the Walmart in Beaver Creek, where they had been told through dispatch by the caller that the shooter had already emptied at least one clip and was reloading an automatic weapon, and that he was pointing it at kids. So they went into a situation where, to the best of their knowledge, there was an active shooter massacring people inside the store who had killed adults and children and was going to continue until they stopped him. And they confronted him, and he said something that, in that context, was absolutely crazy. He told them the gun wasn't real. It's right there in front of them. They can see it. And, you know, starts raising it up, so they shot him. Turns out the caller lied. The gun was a toy. The guy hadn't pointed it at anybody. There was no clip. There was no shooting. There were no bullets. And so now there's Beaver Creek officers who have killed a man, and for the rest of their lives, they will have to remember killing a man. But they didn't just have to deal with that. They were demonized for it, because this was a police shooting of an unarmed citizen, and he was black. So it was a police shooting of an unarmed black man. And of course there was an investigation. Of course they had to explain themselves. And of course there were people in the community for whom no explanation would have been sufficient. Right? And there were, like, the fortunate thing was when Al Sharpton showed up here to try to make something of it, the people of Beaver Creek told him where he could go and what he could do with himself, which was good. But there were still protests. There was still, you know, controversy and everything. And that's just one experience of a few police officers. People who have to deal with that every day, who have to know that no matter what they do, they're going to be considered the bad guys for trying to be the good guys. I can imagine that depression is rampant. Stephen asking why didn't he follow cop instructions? He didn't know what was going on. He was trying to reassure them. He was on the phone with his girlfriend at the time. He didn't even know that there had been a call. So from his perspective, he had picked up a toy gun he wanted to buy. He's walking around the store with it, talking to his girlfriend on the phone about his purchases, and the next thing you know, there's two cops pointing a gun at him. People in the moment don't always do the smartest thing, and so he didn't drop it. He went to show them it's a toy. And it wasn't the type of toy that had to have an orange tip. So, you know. But in any case, like, the cops in Chicago, that's Beaver Creek, that's one incident. The cops in Chicago have stuff like that happen to them every day. And I will bet you that there's a large portion of that police department, a large percentage of that police department, that has actually had to fire a bullet at another person. And you don't know if you're going to kill the other person when you do that. Sometimes you have to try to do exactly that if they're in the process of killing someone else and you're trying to stop them. And no matter what, if you've gone into police work to be the good guy, that's going to be traumatic. You can go into police work to kill people. So I can understand. This is one of those situations where they really do need a lot of support. And it really does make it all that much more reprehensible what Jussie Smollett did. Because those are the guys whose chain he yanked.
Yep. Chicago cops. And
once again, I'd like to take the time to remind and reassure you all that the ICMI will not be in one of the more troublesome areas of Chicago.
No.
It's just like London. In London, people get stabbed all over the place, but not in the place where we had the conference. It was quite close to Tower Hamlets, come to think of it, but it is an appreciable distance by Docklands Light Railway.
It's like that here in Dayton, too.
I really want to respect the police in Britain. I really, really want to. And I want to respect the police in London. I want to believe they're only carrying out orders, like, you know, perhaps begrudgingly. I just don't know how many of them are the SJW types who are quite complicit in those orders. I just...
Yep. Okay, so I got some super chats, or a super chat, from Egregious Charles, who says, they enlist to be protectors, but actually function as an occupying army enforcing laws the people don't really support. Very stressful. That was for $5. Thank you, Charles. Yeah. You know, that's what I'm saying. That's why I say, you know, being a cop, that's like one of the most thankless jobs that I can think of off the top of my head. Even soldiers who are also paid to essentially kill people, there are people who can compartmentalize that because it's not happening here and it's happening somewhere else. And, you know, they assume that they're serving their country wherever they are. And they probably know people who are in that are serving or have served or whatever. But when it comes to the police, they just, you know, it's like it's probably the most thankless job I can think of. And no wonder there's so much suicide. No wonder it's a really hard thing to do. And as somebody said in the chat, and I think this was I was going to say myself, you could be in the police force for 30 years and do a really great job, and no one says anything to you except like the people who you're closest to, like your people that you work with and your family and such. But if you make one mistake and you accidentally shoot somebody and it turns into like a media firestorm because they had the wrong skin color or you had the wrong skin color at the time or whatever it is, then, you know, that's the end of everything. Just one mistake, you know, and it's not just like it's like other things, too. You know, everybody's got phones on them now and these sorts of things are they're used to weaponize. They weaponize video footage against people they don't like. And it just so happens it happens to cops a lot now. And there's lots and lots and lots of people who put up like doctored footage where they cut out, you know, the context, and you just see the part where the cop gets aggressive and you don't know why because you don't have the full story, but people tend to respond emotionally to that. And that's what we go on. And that's how you get all of these various controversies that pop up in the media. And there, I mean, you can see that because there's also like really hilarious things. You remember the, you know, the sovereign citizens that get into big arguments with cops because they think they're above the law or immune to the law. And these cops are immensely patient with people, especially once they know they're being filmed. I mean, who knows? They probably are anyway. But in my experience with police, I've always been absolutely forthright and obedient until the encounter is over. And I've never, ever had a problem with the cops. Never. So, because I know it's not an easy job to do. I mean, I know that. I remember when I was a kid, I wanted to do it. But yeah, maybe I wasn't cut out for that. Maybe not. So, all right. Anyway, Meredith Glassberg gives us $5 and says, think about the stress of being a detective in a city with a high volume of unsolved crimes and the impact of all those crime scenes on them. Oh, I know. And that's just detectives. I mean, I had people break into my apartment, and one time it happened while I was home with my girlfriend at the time, and we had to go, like, I chased him out of here because he crawled into my bedroom window while I was in the living room, and I chased him out, and then, like, I realized that he stole my girlfriend's credit card, and we had to, you know, go to the bank and everything else and then file a report with the cops, and then they caught the guy. And we had to go down there and identify him. It was like a big old process. And he turned out to be like somebody who went to my mother's church and got to know her and then came and visited. And he was like a kind of a friend of hers. So really just weird shit. So I don't know. I don't envy what police have to go through to do their job. That's all I'm saying. And I'm glad there are people that are identifying that there's a problem with suicide amongst police and that they are trying to address it because, that's pretty fucked.
Yeah.
Are we trying not to curse on the show anymore? Should I like try to chill out on that?
I don't know. Okay. Nobody said anything to me.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to say, watch your goddamn language.
The algorithm doesn't give a shit about swear words and shit.
Okay.
My recent video is still green for no particular reason. There's a couple of fucks and shits in there. I suppose it's musical. Maybe that hides it somewhat.
YouTube implied a while back that videos without swearing would do better.
Nonsense.
That was like one of their official things.
I know what you're saying, what YouTube is saying.
If we're going to go that route, I mean, we can go all Johnny Dangerously on them and start making up our own, you know. Farging bastages. I think one other thing that probably needs a mention is that nobody is saying anything, you know, to the degree that corruption within the police force shouldn't be addressed. In fact, it may be part of the cause of this. Imagine for a moment your job, like for those who are not military or cops or medical personnel, because I think most people in those professions are this way. But imagine you dream growing up about becoming a police officer so you can protect your community from people's mistakes, from bad guys, from, you know, be there as a first responder, be there in disasters to help people and so on. And you're working real hard at that job. And you, every day you go into work and you put yourself at risk and you humble yourself and you provide your service to the community and you strive to be the best you can at what you do, and you your whole goal is to see your neighbors, your fellow citizens safe and as free as they can possibly be, and undisturbed by essentially corrupt behavior. And you got to work with somebody who is gaming the system, who is exploiting the job for some means or another, making money selling drugs that they've taken from people, or using it as a means to exercise their prejudices or whatever. And you got to deal with that person being in your department. And even if you speak up about it, imagine nothing gets done, or worse, you get retaliated against. That would be pretty traumatic too. And I'm sure that there are officers that have to deal with exactly that, that they know, maybe not necessarily, I know that Chicago's pretty big department, and the likelihood that there would be nobody in a department that is screwing up, misbehaving, shouldn't be there, whatever, is pretty low. But, you know, maybe they address things like that properly. And maybe they don't always. And maybe, you know, the police are dealing with having, the police that are going through those experiences are dealing with having to put up with somebody not doing their job right, because they don't necessarily have recourse when that happens. So it would definitely be something to consider. And I think being able to address both corruption and needs for reform, those are things that would have a positive impact on the experiences of police officers who are there to do their job.
Yep. It's hard to, like they said, you know, you have to enforce the laws, and sometimes you don't, the laws are stupid and you don't like them and citizens don't like them. And when people show up, when you show up to enforce them, they see you. They don't see the law, right? They see the cop and they take it out on him or her. Anyway, we should get on to the next story. We have two more to get through. So any other thoughts on this one? Okay, let us move on. Tell us what you guys think about these in the comments. So next up, we're going to be talking about Matt Bormeister, or Bormeister. I'm not really sure if I'm pronouncing that right. I apologize. 2 years ago, Matt Bormeister was accused by the University of Southern California of hurting his girlfriend, Zoe Katz. He was accused by witnesses of slamming her against the wall and choking her. However, both students, Bormeister and Katz, said that they were both horsing around. Yes, you heard that right. She said that he didn't do anything wrong at all. She said this, the supposed victim, okay? How did USC respond? They reached out to Katz to try to convince her that she was a victim. One Title IX administrator, Title IX is rearing its ugly head again, one Title IX administrator said that, quote, "I'm sorry that you feel that way," end quote, when she said that she was not assaulted. She was accused of suffering from, quote, "battered wife syndrome," end quote. There was also a supposed tape of the incident, which both students says supports their claims. USC allegedly threatened Katz after she publicly tweeted about the school's investigation, with a USC administrator saying that, quote, "you're jeopardizing and interfering with an ongoing investigation. You do that again, there could be consequences for you. Don't ever tweet anything like that again," end quote. About the endeavor, Bormeister said that, quote, "the something was in fact Zoe and I joking around in the parking lot, throwing McDonald's French fries at each other. At no time did Zoe ever file a complaint with USC or the LAPD. Instead, because I was a football player, USC's Title IX investigators, headed by Miss Gretchen Dallinger Means, automatically branded me guilty," end quote. Andrew Miltenberg is representing Bormeister. Miltenberg says that, quote, "what happened to Matt Bormeister at USC should terrify anyone who believes in the right to due process and innocent until proven guilty. By subscribing to anti-male stereotypes and insisting that the girlfriend of a football player must somehow be a victim, Means and USC officials have made a complete mockery of the Title IX process. A little late for that. It's been a joke for a while. The process my client was forced to endure over the end result was nothing less than abusive. End quote. The goal of the lawsuit is to have the punishment overturned and have Boermeester's record cleared. He asked to be reinstated to the football team and seek monetary damages. So the guy was expelled despite the fact that he committed no crime or did nothing wrong. And even his girlfriend tried to defend him. They wanted her to believe that she was a victim so bad that they told her she must have been lying when she said that nothing happened.
You know, it's funny. I usually like to talk about these stories with a friend of mine who doesn't quite always line up with my political views, but that's what makes him really good to bounce ideas off of. And we were talking about this, and he was like, "Oh, wait." I like started like the first few sentences, like, "Oh, wait. I know what this one. I remember this one. This is from a couple years ago, right?" And I'm like, "No, actually, it's more recent than that." And he's like, "Well, was it this one that happened over here at this? No, that's the wrong part of the U.S. And we're just sitting there like, wow, this happens so often that you start losing track of them, don't you?
Yeah, I feel like we covered this one, but no.
No, there's been a number of incidents where a third party has made an accusation that a guy is abusing or has sexually abused his girlfriend or a girl that he's associated with, his date, whatever. And for various reasons, there's been some instances where the third party did so out of jealousy and is basically was trying to split up the two individuals accused. And in this instance, it's simply an overzealous Title IX investigator. But, you know, the thing to remember about this, the ironic thing, right? The reason Title IX exists at all, it was put into place to dictate to universities that receive federal funding that the sex of a student cannot be a reason why the student is excluded from an academic area, and then it was expanded to sports, right? You can't exclude a student from an athletic area because of the student's sex. You can't. Now, all of the twists and turns it has taken, a student's sex is now becoming the reason why the student can get kicked out of school on scant allegations, on no evidence, because an investigator is trained to believe that a conviction, a responsibility finding, is their job. So they're now expelling guys from university. They are excluding guys from areas of academia, from their area of study, from the ability to go on to another university, everything, because they're male. They're being targeted because they're male. And this woman's experience, he is the main victim of this because he's been kicked out of university. He's been targeted. And he is suffering real measurable damages because of this. But imagine being that girl, right? Obviously, like, if they're goofing off together, they're close. This is somebody she cares about. And she's being used as a club with which to bludgeon him. How horrifying that must be. In fact, I could tell you that's horrifying because I've had it happen to me. It wasn't quite this extreme. It didn't quite get this far. If it had, there would have been a lawsuit just like this, but it's insane. And if I were in her situation today, and with the Violence Against Women Act being the age that it is, and if I knew my shit the way I do today regarding the Violence Against Women Act, I would use the stalking section to get a restraining order against that Title IX investigator and the university and get a judge to stop them from continuing this case and to stop them from engaging in any form of retaliation against either one of them. It's not that off base. The law actually specifies that if someone in the United States engages in a course of conduct that causes the person that they're targeting, involves an intent to harass or intimidate or place under surveillance any person, and that that places that person in a state or causes that person substantial emotional distress, or would be reasonably expected to cause that person substantial emotional distress, they're guilty of stalking or harassment and can be penalized under the section that basically determines the penalties for stalking and harassment. Well, I would think in this situation, being used as a bludgeon against someone you care about on false pretenses by somebody who will not stop trying to punish that person, even after you have said unequivocally that nothing that person did to you was wrong, that you were goofing around together, that it was all harmless, that would cause substantial emotional distress. And you would feel stalked and harassed. You would be stalked and harassed, basically, in that case. It's like that Title IX process that they're going through is essentially an act of stalking and harassment of both of those young people. And as far as I'm concerned, they should file a criminal charge. That's worthy of a complaint. And it would stop this in a heartbeat. They would not be able to continue that. And it's most of the time, I don't like the Violence Against Women Act. I think the way that it's worded, I think the way that it's set up is gender discriminatory. I think it's a huge attack on due process rights. But when somebody engages in something like this, and that law addresses it, use it. You know, it's the only way to stop these people is to hold them accountable under the standards that their side of the political spectrum created.
And by the way, the next step into this abyss is giving the overzealous third party not only the right to define rape in cases of seduction, but also to force the man and the woman to get married. And then we can claim that our women, our poor women, are being forced to marry their rapists. Then we'll have gynocentric victim levels through the fucking roof, and we'll have some threat narrative that we can churn for centuries mindlessly. Consequences will never be the same. And you may think I'm joking, but take a look at India.
Huh? No, I put nothing past them. I put nothing past them.
Well, India has, according to study done by the Hindi, a 65% to 85% rate of false rape allegations. And a large portion of that actually is parents who don't like the relationship that their daughter is in, so they accuse the guy of rape. And another portion is gals that have sex with a guy, thinking that he's going to marry them, and when he doesn't, they accuse him of rape. So that's not too far-fetched.
Okay, so let me do a super chat, and then we'll move on to the last story. So Cyberzerk gives us 50 kronas and says, how many young men join the army and find themselves, quote, protecting their country, end quote, on the other side of the planet in some dirty war about oil? Yeah, just doing their duty, as it were. But I guess thank you for the super chat. That is a bit of a different topic. We're gonna move into the next story, though. This is a little bit of good news. So we have a bit of a win for free speech in the United States. Well, while the European Union is taking it away, Trump is trying to fight for it. So Trump has signed an executive order to promote free speech on college campuses. Public universities seeking funding would first need to certify that they comply with the First Amendment. Now, this is just public universities that take public funding. So the order directs, quote, 12 grant-making agencies to use their authority in coordination with the White House Office of Management and Budget to ensure institutions that receive federal research or education grants promote free speech and free inquiry. During the signing ceremony, Trump said, "We're here to take historic action to defend American students and American values. They've been under siege under the guise of speech codes, safe spaces, and trigger warnings. These universities have tried to restrict free thought, impose total conformity, and shut down the voices of great young Americans like those here today." Trump brought Hayden Williams on stage, the conservative activist who was attacked while working a recruitment table on campus. That's the guy who got punched in the eye. If you guys remember that from like a week ago or two, he brought him up on he was attacked while working a recruitment table on campus at the University of California, Berkeley. "He took a punch for all of us," Trump said of Williams, "and we could never allow that to happen. And here he is. In closing with Hayden, here's the good news. He's going to be a wealthy young man. It's going to be great." As cited by Fox News, Dennis Prager commented, "If President Trump can put a stop to the intolerance of non-leftist viewpoints on college campuses and help steer the country in the right direction, there just might be hope," end quote.
This could really hit universities in the pocketbook if they don't comply. They get a lot of federal, most of their funding, some of these universities, most of their funding comes from the federal government one way or another, either through federally guaranteed student loans and grants, or the money that their professors are getting for research grants and things like that. A lot of universities that have research that takes place on campus, they get more of the funding for that research comes from the federal government than doesn't. And that's like all of the other sources combined don't add up. So either they give all that up or they live by the same standards the government has to live by. And I think that's fair if your tax dollars are actually funding the university. It'd be a different story if they were completely private and tuition wasn't government funded and tuition loans, you know, housing loans and all that weren't federally guaranteed and all that, then they would have the right to set up whatever standards they want to. Students might choose not to go to their schools, but, you know, that's their choice too. But when they're going to start feeding at the federal teat and, you know, they're getting your tax dollars and they're creating a massive amount of student debt in the country. Like if the student debt bubble were to burst, it would wreck the U.S. economy. Then if they're going to do that, then they got to live by the same standards that the federal government has to live by.
There are some. So the executive order was put out, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to happen. So it's got to pass through some channels, and I'm sure they're going to fight it every step of the way. And in addition, I think that this could still create challenges. This is a good first step, but it's not a done deal. So, you know, it all depends on the way in which the universities the way their policies are written and how they, you know, if they really want to, like, essentially keep free speech from becoming a reality, like, because they want to maintain the status quo, they will likely use a bunch of, you know, say, well, it's their ability to work with words, ability to redefine what hate speech is and use that as their, you know, as the thing they stand by. I think that it's just not as easy as writing up an executive order is what I'm saying. So don't get too excited because I'm glad that he took notice and he said something and even put this out there. But if the colleges don't comply or they find a way around it so they can still get the federal funding, but they also can kind of like, you know, pick and choose like how they go about it and it's not fully investigated. I don't know. I just have my doubts that this is actually going to play out in the way that it sounds. I have my doubts.
I just figured out why it's called Pikachu, because it sounds like pick and choose, which is what you do with Pokemon.
Yeah, that's I didn't really think about that. That actually makes a lot of sense.
Wait, the Pokemon?
Yeah, Pikachu, I choose
No, the 17th century philosopher. Yes, the Pokemon.
Yes, the Pokemon.
No. It's the name Pikachu because it's a play on words in Japan. Means electric mouse.
Oh, well, that makes sense, too.
Sorry to shit all over your parade, dog.
Oh, words are so funny.
Okay, so Michael Keller says, isn't free speech part of the U.S. Constitution? If so, why should it depend on the universities? Either they violate the Constitution or not. But the thing is, universities are, and this is the thing, we're talking about public universities, so that'd be like city colleges and shit. Evergreen does count as an example. I believe Evergreen is a city college or it's a community college, which means it's paid for by the state mostly. But the thing is that for-profit colleges, and they might be exempt from this. That's why I'm saying it's not that easy. I'm not really sure how the Ivy League ones work. But it's not as simple as, you know, free speech doesn't necessarily get enforced on private individuals or private country or companies rather. And so it gets a little bit hairy in the 90% of colleges receive portion of funding. Yeah. So it depends on how much they would lose, Jim Bottle. That he wrote 90% of U.S. colleges receive some portion of funding by Uncle Sam. Yes, it depends on what they stand to lose. And also, again, in terms of how they sort of put together their I guess Trump would have to be pretty like specific in terms of how he's going to address this. And the problem with this speech thing is that it can get murky. And I think that that's the problem. So I don't know. The right kind of speech is the left kind of speech. Yeah. Well, we'll have to see. We'll have to see what happens. I'm hopeful, but again, maybe I'm just a bit cynical about this. All right. Does anyone else have any thoughts on the free speech executive order on college campuses? No? Oh, I'm surprised. All right. Well,
none that I can express within the EU. No.
Well, then I guess we're going to go ahead and wrap it up. So I want to thank you guys for coming on today's HBR News Show. Now we're going to go into the after show. We're going to look at this story inside the horrifying unspoken world of sexually abusive nuns. And not even the hot kind. It's like real nuns. And so, you know, if you guys want to be a part of that, I don't know why you would, become a patron by going to feedthebadger.com. Better yet, become a badger and start up a monthly subscription. This will let you get into the Discord and you'll be able to like talk to us on the Discord and talk to the other patrons. And there's lots of stuff to do there. You'll also be able to watch the after shows depending on your sort of level that you want to donate at. And you could even join us in the actual after show room and talk to us there live while we do the after shows, and you'll get access to lots of other sort of behind the scenes content and discussions that aren't, let's say, that are not available to normal subscribers. So be sure to consider doing that and look into it. Go to feedthebadger.com. In addition, for those of you guys otherwise, just hit the like button if you haven't already. Give us a subscription if you're not. I saw that we got a sub while we were doing the show. Thank you so much for that. And be sure to hit the bell for notifications. Leave a comment about any of the stories or all of them. And yeah, just let us know what you think about all that's transpired. With that said, I'm going to go ahead and get us out of here. I'm going to thank Mike Stevenson, Mike J, and Hannah for coming on. And I especially want to thank you guys for watching. Have a great day, everybody. We'll see you next time. And check your sack.